Who's back? I'm back for another episode of Love Notes to Lisa, finally, episode 7. Now, if you're a casual follower, say you've subscribed to the show, you might say, hey, the last episode I heard was episode 4, maybe. Probably 4, maybe 5. Yes, it's true. I haven't uploaded some. There was a Valentine's episode, and there was something before that. I never got around to uploading them. Maybe I'll upload them later with like a little intro saying, hey, this is an old episode. If you really care to hear it, you know, let me know. Other than that, I guess I'm not that worried about it. But a lot of crazy stuff has been happening in my life. I have moved in with Lisa, the love of my life. Love Notes to Lisa. The show is dedicated to her. And, you know, it was very hectic doing the moving. I had to rent a 26-foot U-Haul. And you think it drives like a car. It does kind of drive like a car a little bit, but I mean, it's fucking long. Try pulling that in. I mean, it's hard to get into tight areas, which I had to do, which I almost took out a porch and a tree. Well, actually, I did kind of take out a tree a little bit, small tree. Yeah, but luckily I paid $7 for the insurance on it, and I didn't have to worry about that. Wasn't really much damage to the truck after all. But anyway, you know, I've been going through a lot of crazy stuff in my life. I'm about to finally get my divorce finalized in May. Hooray for that. And, you know, my ex is taking half my money. But I am not here to bring anyone down, especially Lisa, who listens to this show religiously, I might add. I just want to say, we start off the entire show with a song from MXPX, Lucky Guy, because I am a lucky guy, and she does still love me, Lisa does. You probably thought, hey, this is a great show until they break up, and then there's no more Love Notes. Well, that's not the case here, asshole. So stop saying that. So, MXPX, Lucky Guy, from their brand new album, Plans Within Plans, and it's a good album. It's a really great album. We're going to be starting a new website called MuxworthyReviews.com. Hopefully, by the time you hear this, you can go to it. If you feel like it, you don't have to. You know, it seems like you listen to radio shows, they're like, check us out online. Well, what's going to be there? Well, I'm going to put reviews up there, album reviews, book reviews. I listen to a lot of audiobooks. Lisa and I listen to a lot of audiobooks, so we're going to both put reviews of the same stuff that we're into. It's all going to be stuff that we like. I don't really want to review things that I don't like. So if I'm reviewing something, it's going to be like, this is worthwhile checking out. And I'll just give you a look at my viewpoint on it. It'll be a little bit better than me right now, because right now, just talking off the top of my head, it's not very articulate. When you write a review, it's a little bit more in depth, and makes me sound like I'm smart. We're also going to put some writing on there. We write some short stories and stuff. We're going to put that sort of stuff up there. I'm going to put this podcast up there. It's not going to be, I don't have Facebook, I don't have Twitter, so it's not going to be like the most widely, you know, commercialized website. It's going to be one of those kind of things where either you heard about it or you stumbled across it. It's not going to be like a big heralded thing, but I'm going to get back into interviews and shit like that. Etc., etc. What the hell am I talking about? Anyway, I feel like I've talked on forever. I bored myself to death. So, I'm going to play a song. Actually, I'm thinking right now. You know, I just want to say, I'm going to intersperse throughout here, because sometimes I like to read from books. So, throughout this story, I did a fake newscast you'll hear a little bit later, and I also am going to be reading from J.D. Salinger's 9 stories that's going to be coming up. It's going to be the same story spread out throughout the show. Anyway, let's get to a brand new song from Anti Flag called The Ranks of the Masses Rising from their latest album, The General Strike. This album is awesome. I love it. It's back to being fast and aggressive and melodic again. Their last album, now that it's an old album, I didn't really like it very much. It's probably one of my least favorite albums. But I don't like to really talk trash about things. But now that it's old, I can say, don't waste your time with that one. Get this one, The General Strike. And this is a great song, and if I was still into my political, you know, back when I was political and speaking out about things that I barely knew anything about, I would definitely be chanting this song and playing it all the time. This is Anti-Flag with The Ranks of the Masses Rising from the album The General Strike by Anti-Flag.
Time's up, you're out of luck, and your back's up against the wall. From Tunisia to Washington, the people are calling no. You're gassing guns, you're constant thugs, relies on the TV. None of that can save you now, as your reign is swept away. Get up, your voices are needed. Become the pulse of the revolution, in the ranks of the masses rising. Get up, your voices are needed. Become the pulse of the revolution, in the ranks of the masses rising. Another shakedown and a slap in the face, and he knew he'd had enough. He touched himself in gasoline, took a breath and lit a match. She said, I will go down to Tahrir Square, and I will stand alone. And if you have anything to take, I won't be on my own. Get up, your voices are needed. Become the pulse of the revolution, and the ranks of the masses rising. Get up, your voices are needed. Become the pulse of the revolution, and the ranks of the masses rising.
How it is.
with another brand new album. It's a couple months old. The album is called A Brief Crack of Light, and that song is called Before You, With You, After You. Now, both of those bands, Anti-Flag Therapy, we're going to be hearing more of them on the show right here, and I'll find more stuff to play. I don't have like a ton of music to play today, but I got a ton of filler, I guess you could call it, but I think it's going to be fun stuff, so let's get to some of that right now. I would like to get, by the way, as a side note, I would like to try to get another interview with the singer of Therapy for this album, so hopefully we'll be trying to arrange that and get that to happen. I've done it in the past. I can do it again in the future. Just hang in there. Bear with me. I'm hoping that this time around, when I interview people, it'll be more about, you know, themselves as artists and the music, and I don't know what the interviews of the future are going to hold, but I kind of have to start looking at it like if they were speaking autobiographically, you'd want to know what was going on during the making of this particular album in their lives. So it's good to have that stuff on file, if you know what I'm saying, because interviewers, nobody remembers who the fuck is interviewing who. They just hear the person that's being interviewed. To catch my drift. So, let's have some fun right now. Let's have some fun. Let's have some comedy. Let's go for it. Let's hear some Air Supply, covered by Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, from an album from last year called Go Down Under. This is All Out of Love. Showed up this weekend in Buffalo, New York to the first ever Beans and Punk Festival sponsored by local organic bean growers. The festival was a celebration of food, namely bean casseroles and salads, and music, which was predominantly a punk rock genre, give or take a few hardcore metal bands. The festival boasted over 300 different bean dishes, 15 local bands, and 7 national acts on 3 stages, including Craig's Brother, The Dreadnoughts, The Lucky Ones, Flogging Molly, Polar Bear Club, Face to Face, and Strung Out. One concert goer who referred to himself as Ben X referred to the festival as...
A great idea. I mean, we're all vegetarians anyway, so this is the first time I've ever been to a festival that I didn't have to hand stuff from Pita out at. Now I just enjoy all the rad bands, drink some beer, and eat some beans.
In addition to the bean vendors, the festival offered beer from over 40 different brands, 30 of which being local microbrewers, including one boasting beer recipes brewed from beans. Tom Reynolds of Black Grove Brewery introduced me to a couple of these flavors.
We've got coffee bean if you're looking for a little pep in your step, vanilla bean, lima bean. We also have a pinto bean that's always a hit at our annual Mexican-American festival that goes great with a tequila lime salt.
When asked if the bean beer gives you the typical bean-induced gas, Reynolds replied,
I've heard some people claim they've gotten the beer shits, but I tend to believe those people visited the cheaper vendors first, like Coors Light.
Beer samples were offered of all the unique bean flavors, and when Reynolds asked Sheila Bradley of Cheektowaga, New York, what she thought of them, she simply stated,
lima beans are gross.
When asked about the lima bean beer, Reynolds said,
a lot of people say that at first try. The lima bean is really the beer of beans in the sense that, to some people, beer is an acquired taste. The lima bean is also an acquired taste, and therefore our lima bean beer is really a celebration of the acquired taste. That one's definitely one of my faves.
But the festival was not all food and drink and song and dance to everyone who attended. Local Green Movement activist Lindsay Archulk was there passing out global warming pamphlets with a picture of the Earth wearing a gas mask with the words mass murder emblazoned above and below it.
You can't have this many people in this one little area passing gas like this,
Lindsay stated.
Do your research. Methane gas carries carbon dioxide that makes the Earth heat up and land recede. The effects of this festival alone this year is going to be astronomical. We're talking one of our driest, hottest summers to date.
As with any outdoor festival, heat and dehydration weighed heavy on the minds of local EMTs volunteering at the festival. Jazz Murphy, an EMT from Greece, New York, reminded concert goers to
stay hydrated by drinking lots of water and stay out of the sun as much as possible.
I asked Jazz if he thought beer caused dehydration, and he replied,
It could. I mean, if I was you, I'd drink 2 waters for every beer. Oh, and get yourself some salt packets. One of the beer vendors is carrying tequila lime salt.
When asked about the beans at the festival, Chaz reported,
On a day like today, I wouldn't eat nothing at this bean festival. Get your insides all torn up. What do you think's gonna happen? We got injured buddy people walking up here. Looks like they're smiling. Really, they ain't happy at all. They just got a gas bubble.
But it didn't take an EMT to realize just how poorly planned this festival had been with regard to the human body and its reaction to a day of sun, beer, and beans, because there were only 35 porta potties spread throughout the festival, and one particular incident was about to send concert goers scrambling to the fields. The incident happened during the set of Canadian punk rock band The Lucky Ones at approximately 3:15 and at 95 degrees. The singer of The Lucky Ones jokingly announced he was changing the name of their song Punk Rock Till We Parted to Punk Rock Till We Farted in honor of the festival.
Like, as soon as he said that, the whole place started smelling bad.
Liz Gillette of Rochester, New York said the joke had been taken literally and the fans had started flatulating. Mike Sebring, a security guard for the band, described the fans' reaction to the announcement and the pandemonium that played out before his very eyes.
It was a shit riot. I had a feeling something was gonna happen. Everyone looked kinda sick. As soon as this guy said something about farting, I saw everybody's face change. It was this weird look of relief. It started smelling like a sewer, and everybody cleared out to find a bathroom.
But there just weren't enough porta potties to go around.
People were running out into the field. A lot of kids had accidents in their pants. I saw a 17-year-old girl crying with shit in her stocking down by her ankle.
At this point, the festival started resembling the 1990s Woodstock Festival, with concert goers covered from head to toe with mud. Only instead of being mud, they were actually covered in feces.
Did you just come out of the circle pit?
circle shit.
Despite the mishap, some young concert goers were determined to have fun and not let it get them down on the dumps. They gave up even trying to gain access to a toilet. Porta Johns were tipped and high fives were distributed. They laughed, sang, and danced with dung on their skin and urinal cake blue in their mohawks. I'm Harvey Chester, Weekend Wrangler. To be confused with their parody, Punk Rock Till We Farted, from their album Heartbreak Hangovers and Punk Rock. I hope you were entertained, because I needed a writing outlet. I needed an outlet. You know, I could, sometimes you just gotta write a fake article and get the old, you know, journalist muscles flexing. That kind of proves maybe I could do an actual real, you know, a real festival coverage, but would I want to? I don't know. We'll see. Up next, I want to play something from the brand new Van Halen album. Yeah. It's kind of silly. The album, I mean, when you listen to the new Van Halen album, it makes you want to just go back and listen to, like, the first two albums. But I guess it's a good sign, because I guess, from what I understand, a lot of the songs are just reworkings of old demos from, like, 1978. That's a good thing, as far as I'm concerned. So here's kind of a cool song from, it's got a fucking absolute ripping guitar solo in it. It's got the silly background singing. the singers are going out of space, out of space, and it's the song's called Out of Space, like outer space but out of space. I can't figure out which way they want to go with it. Listening to the album, it feels kind of like a novelty. It's not like, oh my god, this is my favorite album. I don't know if there's anyone out there that's really saying that this is their favorite album, but who fucking knows? I doubt it. I highly doubt it. And they even do, like, there's one song in there that sounds like Hot for Teacher, and there's another song that's on there that sounds like Ice Cream Man, where they say Stay Frosty through the whole thing. My kids really love that song. And my kids are 12 and 5, so there you go. Stay Frosty. This is Van Halen with Out of Space.
Interstellar facial fold, bumper sticker of a rocket's ass. Go home, the Earth is full.
By J.D. Salinger. There were 97 New York advertising men in the hotel, and the way they were monopolizing the long-distance lines, the girl in 507 had to wait from noon till almost 2:30 to get her call through. She used the time, though. She used an article in a women's pocket-sized magazine called Sex is Fun, or Hell. She washed her comb and brush. She took the spot out of the skirt of her beige suit. She moved the button on her Saks blouse. She tweezed out two freshly surfaced hairs in her mole. When the operator finally rang her room, she was sitting on the window seat and had almost finished putting lacquer on the nails of her left hand. She was a girl who, for a ringing phone, dropped exactly nothing. She looked as if her phone had been ringing continually ever since she had reached puberty. With her little lacquer brush, while the phone was ringing, she went over the nail of her little finger, accentuating the line of the moon. She then replaced the cap on a bottle of lacquer and, standing up, passed her left, the wet, hand back and forth through the air. With her dry hand, she picked up a congested ashtray from the window seat and carried it with her over to the night table on which the phone stood. She sat down on one of the made-up twin beds, and it was the fifth or sixth ring, picked up the phone. Hello, she said, keeping her fingers of her left hand outstretched and away from her white silk dressing gown, which was all that she was wearing, except mules. Her rings were in the bathroom. I have your call to New York now, Mrs. Glass, the operator said. Thank you, said the girl and made room on the night table for the ashtray. A woman's voice came through. Muriel, is that you? The girl turned the receiver slightly away from her ear. Yes, Mother, how are you? She said. I've been worried to death about you. Why haven't you phoned? Are you all right? I tried to get you last night and the night before. The phone here's been... Are you all right, Muriel? The girl increased the angle between the receiver and her ear. I'm fine. I'm hot. This is the hottest day they've had in Florida, and why haven't you called me? I've been worried to... Mother, darling, don't yell at me. I can hear you beautifully, said the girl. I called you twice last night, once just after I told your father you'd probably call last night, but no, he had to... Are you all right, Muriel? Tell me the truth. I'm fine. Stop asking me that, please. When did you get there? I don't know. Wednesday morning, early. Who drove? He did, said the girl. And don't get excited. He drove very nicely. I was amazed. He drove? Muriel, you gave me your word of... Mother, the girl interrupted. I just told you, he drove very nicely. Under 50 the whole way, as a matter of fact. Did he try any of that funny business with the trees? I said he drove very nicely, Mother. Now please, I asked him to stay close to the white line and all, and he knew what I meant, and he did. He was even trying not to look at the trees, you could tell. Did Daddy get the car fixed, incidentally? Not yet. They want $400 just to... Mother, Seymour told Daddy he'd pay for it. There's no reason for... Well, we'll see. How did he behave in the car and all? All right, said the girl. Did he keep calling you that awful? No, he has something new now. What? Oh, what's the difference, Mother? Muriel, I want to know. Your father... All right, all right. He calls me Miss Spiritual Tramp of 1948, the girl said and giggled. It isn't funny, Muriel. It isn't funny at all. It's horrible. It's sad, actually. When I think how... Mother, the girl interrupted, listen to me. You remember that book he sent me from Germany? You know, those German poems? What I'd do with it? I've been racking my... You have it. Are you sure? Said the girl. Certainly, that is. I have it. It's in Freddy's room. You left it here, and I didn't have room for it in the... Why? Does he want it? No, only he asked me about it when we were driving down. He wanted to know if I'd read it. It was in German! Yes, dear. That doesn't make any difference, said the girl, crossing her legs. He said that the poems happened to be written by the only great poet of the century. He said I should have bought a translation or something, or learned the language, if you please. Awful. Awful. It's sad, actually, is what it is. Your father said last night... Just a second, Mother, the girl said. She went over to the window seat for her cigarettes, lit one, and returned to her seat on the bed. Mother, she said, exhaling smoke. Muriel, now listen to me. I'm listening. Your father talked to Dr. Savetsky. Oh, said the girl. He told him everything. At least, he said he did. You know your father, the trees, that business with the window, those horrible things he said to Granny about her plans for passing away, what he did with all those lovely pictures from Bermuda, everything. Well, said the girl. Well, in the first place, he said it was a perfect crime the army released him from the hospital. My word of honor. He very definitely told your father there's a chance, a very great chance, he said, that Seymour may completely lose control of himself. My word of honor. There's a psychiatrist here at the hotel, said the girl. Who? What's his name? I don't know. Reiser or something? He's supposed to be very good. Never heard of him. Well, he's supposed to be very good anyway. Muriel, don't be fresh, please. We're very worried about you. Your father wanted to wire you last night to come home as a matter of... I'm not coming home right now, Mother, so relax. Muriel, my word of honor. Dr. Savitsky said Seymour may completely lose control... I just got here, Mother. This is the first vacation I've had in years, and I'm not going to just pack everything and come home, said the girl. I couldn't travel now anyway. I'm so sunburned, I can hardly move. You're badly sunburned? Didn't you use that jar of bronze I put in your bag? I put it right... I used it. I'm burned anyway. That's terrible. Where are you burned?
All over, dear. All over.
That's terrible. I'll live. Tell me, did you talk to this psychiatrist?
Well, sort of, said the girl.
What'd he say? Where was Seymour when you talked to him? In the ocean room, playing the piano. He's played the piano both nights we've been here. But what'd he say? Oh, nothing much.
He spoke to me first. I was sitting next to him at bingo last night. He asked me if it wasn't my husband playing the piano in the other room. I said, yes, it was. And he asked me if Seymour's been sick or something. So I said, why do you ask that? I don't know, Mother. I guess because he's so pale and all, said the girl. Anyway, after bingo, he and his wife asked me if I wouldn't like to join them for a drink, so I did. His wife was horrible.
You remember that awful dinner dress we saw in Bonnet's window? The one you said you'd have to have a tiny, the green? She had it on, in all hips.
She kept asking me if Seymour's related to that Suzanne Glass that has that place on Madison Avenue, the millinery.
What do you say, though?
The doctor.
Oh, well, nothing much, really. I mean, we were in the bar and all. It was terribly noisy.
Yes, but did you tell him what he tried to do with Granny's chair?
No, Mother. I didn't go into details very much, said the girl. I'll probably get a chance to talk to him again. He's in the bar all day long.
Did he say he thought there was a chance he might get, you know, funny or anything? Do something to you?
Not exactly, said the girl. He had to have more facts, Mother. They have to know about your childhood, all that stuff. I told you, we could hardly talk. It was so noisy in there.
Well, how's your blue coat?
All right. I had some of the padding taken out.
How are the clothes this year?
Terrible. But out of this world.
You see, sequins. Everything, said the girl.
How's your room?
All right. Just all right, though. We couldn't get the room we had before the war, said the girl.
The people are awful this year.
You should see what sits next to us in the dining room, at the next table. They look as if they drove down in a truck.
Well, it's that way all over. How's your ballerina?
It's too long. I told you it was too long.
Muriel, I'm going to ask you once more. Are you really all right?
Yes, Mother, said the girl.
For the 19th time.
And you don't want to come home?
No, Mother.
Your father said last night that he'd be more than willing to pay for it if you'd go away someplace by yourself and think things over. You could take a lovely cruise. We both thought,
no thanks, said the girl, and uncrossed her legs.
Mother, this call is costing a fortune.
When I think of how you waited for that boy all through the war, I mean, when you think of all those crazy little wives who...
Mother, said the girl, we'd better hang up. Seymour may come in at any minute.
Where is he?
On the beach.
On the beach?
By himself?
Does he behave himself on the beach?
Mother, said the girl, you talk about him as though he were a raving maniac.
I said nothing of the kind, Muriel.
Well, you sound that way. I mean, all he does is lie there. He won't take his bathrobe off.
Why won't he take his bathrobe off? Why not?
I don't know. I guess because he's so pale.
My goodness, he needs the sun.
Can't you make him?
You know Seymour, said the girl and crossed her legs again.
He says he doesn't want a lot of fools looking at his tattoo.
He doesn't have any tattoo. Did he get one in the army?
No, Mother. No, dear, said the girl and stood up.
Listen, I'll call you tomorrow, maybe.
Muriel, now listen to me.
Yes, Mother, said the girl, putting her weight on her right leg.
Call me the instant he does or says anything at all funny. You know what I mean. Do you hear me?
Mother, I'm not afraid of Seymour.
Muriel, I want you to promise me.
All right, I promise.
Goodbye, Mother, said the girl.
My love to Daddy.
She hung up.
I've been young, I've been old, I've been hurt and consoled. Heart of coal, heart of gold, so I'm told. I've been lost, I've been found, I've been taken by the sound. I can't help it if I
That was new from last year. It's new to me now. Some of these albums are from last year, but it's still new to me. So that was Wilco with a song called Dawned on Me, which I dedicate to my girl, Lisa, from the album The Whole Love. And I guess if you're in upstate New York like me, they're coming to Rochester August 4th or 5th or August something. Look it up. And they're playing the Highland Bowl. That's really interesting because as far as I remember, I played the Highland Bowl once, and the Villains, my rockabilly band, and it was outdoors, and that would be, for the particular venue that it is, it would be actually really cool to go see Wilco at this place. But that's if you have $45, and I do not. I don't have any extra money, as a matter of fact. But, you know, that's a whole different story. Let's not get into that. What am I going into right now? So up next, I want to play another song for you, baby. If you're a friend of mine, and you know me, you yourself might also be a fan of the Helicopters. I'm a fan of the Helicopters. They broke up a couple years ago, maybe 2007, 2008. I don't know. I can't remember. But the singer, Nick, is back. He's got a band called Imperial State Electric. This is their second album. I don't have their first album. But I really like this song a lot. This song is called Can't Seem to Shake It Off My Mind. It reminds me of the Helicopters. Kind of mellow. It's not like the single from the album. It's kind of mellow. Kind of reminds me of the Helicopters. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Beatles. So I know that when we were driving back from Buffalo, I tried to play this album, Lisa, and you were like not really into it. We listened to NOFX all the way up. I mean, how can you listen to NOFX on the way up and then listen to this on the way back and not think it's a little dull? But let's listen to it now with a different opinion and say, hey, this does kind of sound a little bit like the Beatles, but not really. You know, the Beatles are the Beatles, and Imperial State Electric is Imperial State Electric. And I could talk about this all day, but I'm not gonna, because this is Imperial State Electric with Can't Seem to Shake It Off My Mind from the album Pop War. Sybil Carpenter, who was staying at the hotel with her mother. Did you see more glass? Pussycat, stop saying that. It's driving Mommy absolutely crazy. Hold still, please. Mrs. Carpenter was putting suntan oil on Sybil's shoulders, spreading it down over the delicate wing-like blades of her back. Sybil was sitting insecurely on a huge inflated beach ball facing the ocean.
She was wearing a canary yellow two-piece bathing suit, one piece of which she would not actually be needing for another 9 or 10 years. It was really just an ordinary silk handkerchief. You could see when you got up close, said the woman in the beach chair beside Mrs. Carpenter's. I wish I knew how she tied it. It was really darling. It sounds darling, Mrs. Carpenter agreed. Sybil, hold still, pussy. Did you see more glass? Said Sybil. Mrs. Carpenter sighed. All right, she said. She replaced the cap on the suntan oil bottle. Now run and play, pussy. Mommy's going up to the hotel and have a martini with Mrs. Hubble. I'll bring you the olive. Set loose, Sybil immediately ran down to the flat part of the ocean and began to walk in the direction of Fisherman's Pavilion, stopping only to sink a foot in the soggy, collapsed castle. She was soon out of the area reserved for guests of the hotel. She walked for about a quarter of a mile and then suddenly broke into an oblique run up the soft part of the beach. She stopped short when she reached the place where a young man was lying on his back. "Are you going in the water, Seymour Glass?" she said. The young man started, his right hand going to the lapels of his terrycloth robe. He turned over on his stomach, letting a sausage towel fall away from his eyes, and squinted up at Sybil. "Hey! Hello, Sybil! Are you going in the water?" I was waiting for you, said the young man. What's new? What? Said Sybil. What's new? What's on the program? My daddy's coming tomorrow on an airplane, Sybil said, kicking sand. Not in my face, baby, the young man said, putting his hand on Sybil's ankle. Well, it's about time you got here, your daddy. I've been expecting him hourly. Hourly! Where's the lady? Sybil said. The lady? The young man brushed some sand out of his thin hair. That's hard to say, Sybil. She may be in any one of 1,000 places. At the hairdresser's, having her hair dyed mink, or making dolls for poor children in her room. Lying prone now, he made 2 fists, set one on top of the other, and rested his chin on the top one. Ask me something else, Sybil, he said. That's a fine bathing suit you have on. If there's one thing I like, it's a blue bathing suit. Sybil stared at him, then looked down at her protruding stomach. This is a yellow, she said. This is a yellow. It is? Come a little closer. Sybil took a step forward. You are absolutely right. What a fool I am. Are you going in the water? Sybil said. I'm seriously considering it. I'm giving it plenty of thought, Sybil. You'll be glad to know. Sybil prodded the rubber float that the young man sometimes used as a headrest. It needs air, she said. You're right. He needs more air than I'm willing to admit. He took away his fists and let his chin rest on the sand. Sybil, he said, you're looking fine. It's good to see you. Tell me about yourself. He reached in front of him and took both of Sybil's ankles in his hands. I'm Capricorn, he said. What are you? Sharon Lipschutz said you let her sit on the piano seat with you, Sybil said. Sharon Lipschutz said that? Sybil nodded vigorously. He let go of her ankles, drew in his hands, and laid the side of his face on his right forearm. Well, he said, you know how those things happen, Sybil. I was sitting there playing, and you were nowhere in sight, and Sharon Lipschutz came over and sat down next to me. I couldn't push her off, could I? Yes. Oh, no, no, I couldn't do that, said the young man. I'll tell you what I did, though. What? I pretended she was you. Sybil immediately stooped and began to dig in the sand. Let's go in the water, she said. All right, said the young man. I think I can work it in. Next time, push her off, Sybil said. Push who off? Sharon Lipschutz. Ah, Sharon Lipschutz, said the young man. How that name comes up, mixing memory and desire. He suddenly got to his feet. He looked at the ocean. Sybil, he said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll see if we can catch a banana fish. A what? A banana fish, he said, and undid the belt of his robe. He took off the robe. His shoulders were white and narrow, and his trunks were royal blue. He folded the robe, first lengthwise, and then in thirds. He unrolled the towel that he had used over his eyes, spread it out on the sand, and then laid the folded robe on top of it. He bent over, picked up the float, and secured it under his right arm. Then with his left hand, he took Sybil's hand. The two started to walk down to the ocean. I imagine you've seen quite a few banana fish in your day, the young man said. Sybil shook her head. You haven't? Where do you live, anyway? I don't know, said Sybil. Sure you know. You must know. Sharon Lipschutz knows where she lives, and she's only 3 1/2. Sybil stopped walking and yanked her hand away from him.
She picked up an ordinary beach shell and looked at it with elaborate interest. She threw it down. Whirlywood, Connecticut, she said, and resumed walking, stomach foremost. Whirlywood, Connecticut, said the young man. Is that anywhere near Whirlywood, Connecticut, by any chance? Sybil looked at him. That's where I live, she said impatiently. I live in Whirlywood, Connecticut. She ran a few steps ahead of him, caught up her left foot in her left hand, and hopped 2 or 3 times. You have no idea how clear that makes everything, the young man said. Sybil released her foot. Did you read Little Black Sambo? She said. It's very funny that you asked me that, he said. It so happens I just finished reading it last night. He reached down and took back Sybil's hand. What did you think of it? He asked her. Did the tigers run all around that tree? I thought they'd never stop. I never saw so many tigers. There were only 6, Sybil said. Only 6, said the young man. Do you call that only? Do you like wax? Sybil asked. Do I like what? Asked the young man. Wax. Very much, don't you? Sybil nodded. Do you like olives? She asked. Olives, yes. Olives and wax. I never go anyplace without them. Do you like shearing lip shuts? Sybil asked. Yes. Yes, I do, said the young man. What I like particularly about her is that she never does anything mean to little dogs in the lobby of the hotel. That little toy ball that belongs to that lady from Canada, for instance. You probably won't believe this, but some little girls like to poke that little dog with balloon sticks. Sharon doesn't. She's never mean or unkind. That's why I like her so much. Sybil was silent. I like to chew candles, she said finally. Who doesn't? Said the young man, getting his feet wet. Wow, it's cold! He dropped the rubber float on its back. No, wait just a second, Sybil. Wait till we get out a little bit. They waited out till the water was up to Sybil's waist. Then the young man picked her up and laid her down on her stomach on the float. Don't you ever wear a bathing cap or anything? He asked. Don't let go, Sybil ordered. You hold me now. Miss Carpenter, please, I know my business, the young man said. You just keep your eyes open for any banana fish. This is a perfect day for banana fish. I don't see any, Sybil said. That's understandable. Their habits are very peculiar. He kept pushing the float. The water was not quite up to his chest. They lead a very tragic life, he said. You know what they do, Sybil? She shook her head. Well, they swim into a hole where there's a lot of bananas. They're very ordinary-looking fish when they swim in. But once they get in, they behave like pigs. Why, I've known some banana fish to swim into a banana hole and eat as many as 78 bananas. He edged the float and its passenger a foot closer to the horizon. Naturally, after that, they're so fat they can't get out of the hole again. Can't fit through the door. Not too far out, Sybil said. What happens to them? What happens to who? The banana fish. Oh, you mean after they eat so many bananas, they can't get out of the banana hole? Yes, said Sybil. Well, I hate to tell you, Sybil. They die. Why? Asked Sybil. Well, they get banana fever. It's a terrible disease. Here comes a wave, Sybil said nervously. We'll ignore it. We'll snub it, said the young man. 2 snobs. He took Sybil's ankles in his hands and pressed down and forward. The float nosed over the top of the wave. The water soaked Sybil's blonde hair, but her scream was full of pleasure. With her hand, when the float was level again, she wiped away a flat, wet band of hair from her eyes and reported, I just saw one. Saw what, my love? A banana fish. My God, no, said the young man. Did he have any bananas in his mouth? Yes, said Sybil. 6. The young man suddenly picked up one of Sybil's wet feet, which were drooping over the end of the float, and kissed the arch. Hey, said the owner of the foot, turning around. Hey yourself. We're going in now. You had enough? No! Sorry, he said, and pushed the float toward shore until Sybil got off it. He carried it the rest of the way. Goodbye, said Sybil, and ran without regret in the direction of the hotel. that was the Dreadnoughts with Marzuka de Mustache from the album Uncle Touchy Goes to College. It just seemed kind of fitting, yeah, after that talk of Banana Fish, to play something like that. Something French. And that was from a new album from the Dreadnoughts, just from last year. If you've listened to this particular show before, you've heard at least one song from them. If you sat through my reading of the Civil War book, hope you're enjoying the reading of this. I have to get this recorded because I want to try out for someone who reads audiobooks. No, and I'll tell you that right now. Is that going to jinx me? Maybe. But will I be hurt if they reject me? No, because I'll still be able to do it whenever I feel like it. Whenever I want to throw it on here. And it's just going to be something you're going to have to expect me to do once in a while. Sorry. So, another album that's new to me. That might be new to you. Maybe you didn't get around to getting it. The new Megadeth album, 13. This is a pretty cool song. I mean, it all sounds like Megadeth. It's a good album. So is the last album. The new guitar player that he has, great. It sounds like the next chapter. Like let's go right from Rust in Peace and then go to this band. Take the last album that they did and take this album and say, yeah, Megadeth never had any low points because they did. Well, I liked Countdown to Extinction. Countdown to Extinction was actually a really good album. But it was just, you know, really commercial, really mellow. That was like, you know, how Metallica had the Black Album, Megadeth had Countdown to Extinction, which had, you know, Symphony of Destruction on it. You remember that? Foreclosure of a Dream. Those are great songs, but they get old quick. Sweating Bullets definitely gets on the nerves of most people. I can deal with it, though. This is a really cool heavy metal song from Megadeth. They're back with that same distinct sound that some of us, if you're a Megadeth fan, have come to love. So this is Megadeth with Whose Life Is It Anyways from their album 13. We'll be right back. his robe, closed the lapels tight, and jammed his towel into his pocket. He picked up the slimy, wet, cumbersome float and put it under his arm. He plodded alone through the soft, hot sand toward the hotel. On the sub-main floor of the hotel, which the management directed bathers to use, a woman with zinc salve on her nose got into the elevator with a young man. "I see you're looking at my feet," he said to her when the car was in motion. "I beg your pardon," said the woman. "I said, I see you're looking at my feet." "I beg your pardon. I happen to be looking at the floor," said the woman, and faced the doors of the car. "If you want to look at my feet, say so," said the young man. "But don't be a goddamn sneak about it." "Let me out here, please," the woman said quickly to the girl operating the car. The car doors opened, and the woman got out without looking back. "I have two normal feet, and I can't see the slightest goddamn reason why anybody should stare at them," said the young man. "Five, please." He took his room key out of his robe pocket. He got off at the fifth floor, walked down the hall, and let himself into 507. The room smelled of new calfskin luggage and nail lacquer remover. He glanced at the girl lying asleep on one of the twin beds. Then he went over to one of the pieces of luggage, opened it, and from under a pile of shorts and undershirts, he took out an Ortiz caliber 7.65 automatic. He released the magazine, looked at it, then reinserted it. He cocked the piece. Then he went over and sat down on the unoccupied twin bed, looked at the girl, aimed the pistol, and fired a bullet through his right temple. The end.
This is WQRX. That was a new hit, but really?
Yeah, I bet you didn't expect that ending. That wasn't me pretending to be the DJ. That's actually in the album. If you buy that album, Fox of Shazam, Church of Rock and Roll, you will get that little fake DJ thing on there. Every time you listen to the song, you will just be tickled by it. That was Holy Touch from Foxy Shazam from the Church of Rock and Roll. Seemed like an appropriate kind of song after that dramatic finale to the J.D. Salinger story. A Perfect Day for Banana Fish. Yeah, you know, and if I listened to a biography on J.D. Salinger, and if he knew I was reading his story on my show, he would probably kill me, hate me. He wouldn't like it. He'd tell me to take this down. So maybe the J.D. Salinger Society will come after me and make me take this episode down. You never know. We'll find out. I'm just reading it, but who knows? Anyway, I'm going to leave you. One of my most favorite rock bands, The Cult, has a new album coming out in May called Choice of Weapon. No, I didn't read that wrong. Choice of Weapon. This is a new song from that album. This is a single that I was able to acquire somehow. The song is called Lucifer. It goes back in to me. It's got the production of their album Heaven and or Beyond Good and Evil. That's what it's called, Beyond Good and Evil. But it's got like the kind of guitar styling, rock and roll feel of Ceremony. It's got that the song feels like a song that should be from the album Ceremony. Sorry, I touched the thing because I'm looking at the waves. Okay, should stop looking at my recording project. It sounds like something from Ceremony, which is really cool. So, I didn't really like the last album. Some people really loved the last album, but I hated the album, as a matter of fact. I got rid of it. And I love The Cult. So, it's pretty exciting to hear this song, Lucifer. If you haven't heard it, now you get to hear it right here on Love Notes Lisa. Hopefully, you know, my friend Tim's listening to the show. Hopefully Lance is listening to the show. You know, hopefully Chris is listening to the show. Oh yeah, Chris, I got to tell you, if you didn't know already, because a lot of people don't know, I quit Scholar March 23rd. And, you know, they didn't tell anybody that I quit the band. I had to quit the band. I mean, well, the band really was more than I could handle in my chaotic life with having my kids every single weekend and stuff. And that's not really naysaying my kids at all. But, you know, they wanted to do more than I was capable of doing. I asked for some time off in March, and they couldn't give it to me. They felt like I was going to destroy the band if I slowed down at all. And I wasn't able to make it to that show March 23rd, and I got into a big fight with them. We're not in great terms, me and that band. But, you know, there's more important things to life than... I'll tell you what, here's the thing. I've been in several bands throughout my life. One thing I know is that it will destroy a relationship. And there's something that's really important to me right now, and that's my girlfriend Lisa, and that's raising my kids. So when it comes down to who I'm going to have to quote-unquote screw over, it's going to have to be my band, especially since we're not getting paid for any of this stuff. We weren't getting paid, which they'll tell you, with a straight face, it's not about the money, it's about the experience. And then they'll yell at me that, you know, I made them waste money buying products that I said you should have been earning money to get. So, anyway, there's my side of the story. I'm not in Scholar anymore. But you know what? Go to scholarmusic.com, watch the music video that I hate. Listen to the, go buy the EP, buy the shirt, buy all that stuff. They're going to find a new singer. They're going to find a replacement. They're going to keep going with the stuff that we wrote. And that's good because I said, please do that. Even though some unkind words were said to each other, I don't know if I'll ever write music with them again. And I don't know if they'll ever need me to write music with them again, because if they find a good enough singer, they're not going to need me. Anyway, that being said, hopefully all you four got the message. If you want to get a hold of me, my friends, please call me, but don't call me too late because I go to bed early now. I'm a changed man, but I'm back to doing this show, so you can kind of keep a hold of me, in touch with me, and you can kind of hear the things that I have to say. You can kind of keep up a little bit what I have to say. Maybe you should start your own podcast so that I can listen to that. So then we'll have this like weird dialogue conversation between each other through our own podcast, and then we'll hear some music that we're all interested in. It's not a bad idea, really, but we'll find out what you do. This is The Cult with Lucifer, from their upcoming album, Choice of Weapon. Until next time, later, kids, in all my love to Lisa.